When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint the body of Jesus. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting at the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there's the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
I heard about a church somewhere south of here, way south of here. It's a big church in a large city, and on Easter, they had a tradition of filling the chancel with lilies. 500 lilies. Sometimes they were arranged to form a large wall, sometimes in the shape of a cross, and they were beautiful. Each was offered in memory of a loved one, for $8 each. So the insert of the Easter worship bulletin had a list of 500 names, beloved names, each remembered in the giving of a lily. 500 lilies, $8 each. They were beautiful. In the 16th year of that tradition, it came unraveled. After worship was over that day, a woman who belonged to the church came forward. She announced to no one in particular, "I'm going to go visit a friend in the hospital. Can I take one of these lilies? I know I don't know which one I gave. They all look alike." Before she got an answer, she goes up to this enormous display of flowers. 500 lilies to get one. And then she turned to those who remained in the sanctuary and said in a shocked voice, "They're plastic." A gasp went up around the room. "You've got to be kidding." And at first the concern, the shock, was that they were plastic. But then the church treasurer got out his calculator and said, "You know, but we've paid $8 a piece for them. If they're plastic, they might be the same lilies we used last year. And they paid $8 for them last year." There was an instant buzz. Coffee hour was interrupted, huddles formed. Somebody came up with a figure. 500 lilies, $800 each, 16 years. That's $64,000 for the same lilies. As I recall, the minister was a bit surprised, and even more surprised that anybody should find this out. But he investigated briefly and came back to those who were upset and said, "I know that the money has been put to a good use. It has underwritten an emergency fund that helps people in our community." There were murmurs still around the room. I mean, it's church. Some approved, some did not. So to dispel the criticism, he tried to defend the practice another way. "After all," he said, "the plastic lilies are appropriate for Easter because they always bloom. They never die." Well, what do you think? I'm thinking two things. First, these flowers up here are completely real. They are fragrant, they are beautiful, they remember people we love, and they bring honor to the God who created them. Second, that story I just told you is made up. April Fool. Yet even though it is an invented tale, it can instruct us. There are more than a few gotta be kidding me moments in the Easter story we heard today from the Gospel of Mark. First, the big stone in front of the tomb is rolled away. Mark says it was a mega stone. It was very large. I once saw one of those ancient stones with a tour group outside of a grave in Jerusalem. It was designed to keep robbers out of the tomb with the added benefit of keeping someone inside. When the women arrive, the heavy stone is moved away. You've got to be kidding me. Next, there is the man in white, the young man in white. Is he an angel? We don't know. Mark has enough reverence that he does not say. But this young man is not only there, he's inside the tomb, and not only that, he's sitting inside of it. He is calm, matter of fact, completely in control of the moment. Did you ever sit down inside of a tomb? That doesn't happen every day. And then the three women are interrupted from their task. They had gone to anoint his body out of love and respect. The death had come so quickly. The burial was rushed. The Sabbath was at hand. So now the Sabbath is over. They go to the tomb and he's not there. The women see this. Women whose voice was silenced by a men-only culture. And it reminds me of a Facebook notice a friend put up yesterday. I'm all for having a more biblical Easter. Only women can show up. And then in the greatest, you gotta be kidding me moment, these women run away and don't say anything to anybody. Really? Is that so? Then why are you here? How did you get the news? Mark tells the Easter story in such a way that we are left scratching our heads. Is this true? Could Jesus be alive? He doesn't say so conclusively because that would reduce it to being a mere fact, effectively shut it down, dismiss it as a curious thing that happened in history a long time ago. Rather, he tells the Easter story in such a way that it doesn't shut it down, it opens the whole thing up. Because what if it really happened? What if Jesus is alive and now busy? What if the promise of the man in white is true, that if we go to Galilee, the place where Jesus did his work, that we'll see him at work? What if this Easter thing is more than something that happened a long time ago, but rather a way to unlock what God is doing here and now? Now, I'll be the first to admit how I would love to have some tangible proof of the resurrection. It'd be a little creepy, but I would find it a relief, like doubting Thomas, to put my finger in the nail holes and then watch his lungs rise and fall as he breathes. And if that were the case, we could then dispute the death, not his resurrection. And every few years, some hotshot tries to do that, tries to outthink the crucifixion and say, well, it didn't really kind of happen that way. He didn't really die, at least not right away. The whole thing was a scam to win over those feeble-minded disciples. My favorite skeptic of this ilk was the so-called scholar who claimed that the sponge dipped in vinegar that they handed to Jesus on the cross was actually dosed with a sedative which they conveniently had on hand. And he swooned and they thought he was gone and they took him down and he revived some time later and showed up rather bruised and, I guess, scaring people to death. Now, that's an awful lot of speculation when everybody agrees he was dead. The centurion said it, The small crowd nearby watched it. The authorities declared it. The man who donated the tomb knew it. Jesus was dead. And that, by the way, is what is exactly wrong with that goofy minister and the made-up story of the 500 plastic lilies in his church on Easter. Plastic lilies cannot die because plastic lilies never lived. And if something or somebody never lived, it cannot die. But here's the question that Easter raises. If someone dies, can they live again? It is an unsettling question. Why else would these three women run out of the tomb traumatized and tongue-tied? Well, that's an easy one to answer, because everything they thought was settled is now unsettled, and Jesus is not where they expected him to be. So I think about this, because it would really be easy for me to stand up here today and make a lot of noise, that's what we do on Easter, and say, he's risen from the dead, be joyful, all is well, don't be afraid, don't worry, be happy. I could keep saying all that. I could ask the choir to sing something loud. We have a loud director, that's pretty easy for him. I could ask the organist to let it rip and let it roar, floor it, Kay, and she would. She loves to do that. And then we could all depart, put on our white shoes, eat a lot of Jewish ham, and go about the same old business. But what if it's true? What if it's all really true? What if the work of Galilee is now our work? What if we joined Christ in feeding the multitude, in restoring broken life, in building relationships? What if we joined him in confronting the illnesses and the discouragements and the addictions that destroy life? What if we sat with those who are sad and prayed with them through their distress? What if we stood up for those who are plundered by the powerful, declaring that indeed all God's children have equal worth? What if we marched with the kids who don't want to be afraid when they go to school? What if we lived as if we are alive with Jesus? There would be nothing plastic about that. Nothing artificial. No hype, no self-congratulatory nonsense. Just authentic expressions of love and self-giving service. And if we could live like this, that confirmation would come that Christ is risen, that Easter is real. And the life of the risen Christ would infuse our lives. And isn't that what we want? That's when we shall see him. And in that moment, I think two things are going to happen. First, Jesus will look us square in the eye, smile, laugh, and nod in quiet affirmation. And second, he'll look at the powers of death and say, "And you thought you were in charge? April Fool." Happy Easter.